It's time!
Happy New Moment! The Eagle rises again! 29-0.
That's it! He's got the shot!
Nate Diaz!
He's done it!
It is all over! Nate Diaz beats Conor McGregor!
What a night, ladies and gentlemen! What a night!
Rose Namajunas is trying to close the show!
She was doing a great job of faith!
We're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
Gentlemen, I'm Travis Hayden with Ethan and Ryan, and Pound for Pound is back after a week break.
Yes, sir.
All right, guys. All right. That was a little awkward right there.
Whatever.
But let's get into it. We had UFC 321 happen on October 25th.
Yep.
That the last time we were here, we were previewing it. And man, did I go on a mini media tour over the course of UFC 322, where I was hosting on one-on-one right before the fight had started. And I talked about the story of Tom Aspinall and Ciryl Gane. And I hyped this up as the fight for the future of the heavyweight division and everything that was going to happen. And even the entire card, we had Volkov and Almeida. This was really going to be something where we would see the future of the heavyweight division. And to quote the one and only Brock Lesnar, the heavyweight disasters we saw on hand, oh my God.
Yeah, that was supposed to be the fight of the future, and I was watching that live, and my stream glitched, and the next thing I knew, it was the first round, and the next thing I know, Tom Aspinall is holding his eye, and I'm like, no way, like, what just happened? Obviously, he got an eye poke, and the fight was over, and I was like, oh my God. I was just trying to get it up. I was like, yo, my brother, I was sitting with my brother, and I was like, yo, let's get the fight up. I got it on stream. I was going to put it up. And next thing you know, the fight was over because of an eye poke, and it was the worst thing ever. And it was, like, such an anticipated fight. And there's all this controversy about whether Tom Aspinall was valid in his decision to quit. You got Chael Sonnen giving his input. Have you seen Chael Sonnen's input on that?
I have not heard Uncle Chael talk fully on this situation.
He's hating on Tom Aspinall.
That is very interesting, considering we have a D1 John Jones hater on our hands with Chael Sonnen.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he's saying the decision to not go back out there was just seemed as though he didn't give it his all. I mean, so, it seemed like he didn't even try to open his eye. Really.
So I'll be honest, that was a double eye poke. That was really bad.
I agree.
Like, that was not something I don't think you can come back from. As Tom Aspinall posted over the weekend, you can see he's still wearing an eye patch.
Yeah, I know. I disagree with Chael. I can't believe that Chael had that.
Somebody,
he's usually very like level-headed on these.
But when we're going to talk in terms of the fight itself, and I could say this is not how any of us saw it going, at least, especially because in the 4 minutes and 35 seconds that we had of the fight, Ciryl Gane was winning.
Yeah, he was winning well. He can move well.
So I said right before we left off the other day when we did our final predictions for UFC 321, I said that Tom Aspinall and Ciryl Gane, John Jones tends to get proven right in these scenarios a lot of the time.
You went on a whole rant literally about it, like closing out the show, I believe.
I thank you, Ethan. I definitely did. Where I said, even though the entire world thinks Tom is going to win, Vegas thinks Tom is going to win, everybody thinks Tom Aspinall has this one in the bag, and it's going to be your typical Tom Aspinall 55-second knockout. Because, remind you, this guy has an average fight time of around 55 seconds most of the time. He doesn't make it out of the first round.
Wow.
Like, but, so, Gane, even deep waters for a fighter, is mostly considered, like, the championship rounds. You have rounds 4 and 5.
Mm-hmm.
For Tom Aspinall, deep waters is halfway through the first round. He's only been out of the first round one time in his UFC career.
Wow.
So, it's not, so this, Tom Aspinall was in, quote unquote, deep waters with Ciryl Gane in that scenario. Granted, only 2.5 minutes in, but that's still not something you're used to seeing out of Tom. But Gon weathered the storm, and I felt like if Gon could weather the storm early on from Aspinall, we have not seen enough experience from Aspinall in the later rounds, especially like the fact that his only fight to go to the second round was Andrei Arlovsky, and he subbed him like within the first minute of the second round. He's not used to going 15 minutes, 10 minutes. He's used to going 1 minute and done. So when Gon starts to control after the first minute, he's touching him up, he has him cut, you start to think, is Gon finally about to win the UFC heavyweight championship that it's been taken from him?
I mean, Cyril, I'm looking at, not to cut you off, but I'm looking at Oddshark right now. Aspinall was favored to win at negative 345.
Of course, because Aspinall had been running through the entire division. But what happens when you get somebody that runs through the entire division in the span of a minute is you go against a guy who, granted, he's also not as known for his, let's say, higher gas tank. He went five rounds, but like you have somebody that went five rounds, mind you. Think about this. Five rounds with Francis Ngannou. He may have lost, but Francis Ngannou is another one of those guys like Aspinall. He doesn't go into deep waters that often. That was probably the second time Francis Ngannou went to a decision in UFC, and that was a 25-minute fight. Cyril Gane and Francis Ngannou was one of those fights that you watched, where you thought Gon was looked better in the striking. And that's crazy to think because Francis normally knocks everybody out. But Francis got himself together. He composed. And then this was the last time Francis fought in UFC, by the way. He used his wrestling, which was very impressive. That was the first time you ever saw Francis Ngannou turn into a full wrestler. And he used it to control and dominate the fight and steal the win from with a torn ACL and torn meniscus, by the way, too.
Wow.
If you ever see Francis Ngannou go into that fight, he's got knee pads up on him and everything. It's one of the most impressive fighting performances you'll ever see. And I wouldn't say it's the most necessarily entertaining fight of all time.
Yeah.
But it's one of those fights that when you watched it in the moment, it was one of those fights you couldn't take your eyes off of. It was like, oh my God, what am I watching currently right now?
Well, then sometimes with those guys that you bring up with like Francis Ngannou, if I said his name correctly, sometimes if they're used to knocking people out like in the first round and they get dragged 3-4, that's like a different world for them. Then they have to change their whole game plan.
Exactly. So so Francis adapted to that perfectly, and he knew he was going to have trouble on the feet because of his torn ligaments in both knees. Tom was coming into this fight fully healthy. Granted, he's a fighter, so at some point within the next, he was a fighter that was losing a fight. At some point in the next couple months leading up to this rematch, because let's be real, we have to make the rematch now.
Yeah.
Yeah, the rematch has to happen. And speaking of the rematch, I pulled it up. From that 4 minutes that everyone saw that Cyril Gane was a little bit more like evenly matched than maybe people have thought, the odds in the rematch have shifted to only with Aspinall still as the favorite, but only minus 175 with Gane as a plus 150. So the odds makers see it as like almost a toss-up at this point in the rematch. So it's shifted dramatically.
I was going to say, those odds have to shift now. But again, I don't want to use this first fight as a way of saying that Tom Aspinall is going to lose the next fight. Because as we could tell from Magomed Ankalaev and Alex Pereira, anything can happen. Like, you can lose a 25-minute decision dominantly one night, and then you could rematch 6 months later, and you can knock your opponent out in 85 seconds.
Yep.
I agree. I totally agree that it's kind of a different situation, and I don't want to get too, like, overreactive about one round. You know, things happen from round to round.
I don't want to get overreactive about one round, but here's the thing with what if Cyril Gane weathers the storm again?
Like, it's possible.
What happens if Cyril Gane weathers the storm again? Because granted, Tom Aspinall is a great fighter, and he's a great, like, we can't deny. His resume is so impressive. He has beaten everybody. He has finished everybody but Gane, Curtis Blaydes, Sergey Pavlovich, Tybura, Volkov, Spivak, Arlovsky. Sergey Pavlovich was Tom Aspinall before Tom Aspinall. We thought Sergey Pavlovich was coming in. He was murking guys. He also had like a 1 minute fight. He also had a 1 minute.
That was supposed to be a dangerous fight, and it was a complete dominant knockout.
I'll say this when it came to Sergey Pavlovich and Tom Aspinall. You could tell from the moment Tom Aspinall went out for the reach like that, that was anybody's fight. Like, that was like...
You think so?
That was...
You
no,
think
no.
So?
No, that fight was... Whoever lands the first punch is going because Sergey.
Yeah, but I think Sergey is not quite the technician.
He's
not the technician with the power here.
No, he's Sergey Pavlovich is probably the most powerful person in the.
Yeah, but he's not the it was not enough to land it on.
Well,
Tom Aspinall
I mean,
with the technique.
It was the first. He almost got it. There was a punch that got this close to Tom Aspinall's chin in that fight. And you could tell he was going to sleep if Tom Aspinall had been caught with that punch. It was one of those fights where whoever is going to strike first is going to win, and that is what happened. Tom happened to land first.
I want
to
see Volkov back in the picture, which we could get to.
Speaking of, I want to get to that.
Yeah, we
can
get to that.
Hold
on. Before we go from this fight. I'd like to have a hot take, potentially.
Go right ahead.
Spit it.
Cyril Gane should have lost the fight in the eyes of, like, the official records. That should be a Cyril Gane loss. You don't get to a non-contest from fouling someone. You did it. Like, you fouled, whether it was intentional or not. I don't agree with a no contest. It kind of gets him out of... I mean, in theory, it sets up a precedent of where you could accidentally eye poke someone and then end up with a no contest.
I agree with the no contest, actually.
I don't know.
Because it wasn't, one, it was unintentional. Two, it was a freak accident. And normally, like, you'd get the eye poke and somebody would continue, yada, yada, yada. When you want to consider somebody being disqualified, look at Piotr Jan. And Aljamain Sterling.
Yeah, well, Aljo just, like, you know, getting an Oscar on the ground.
Oh, we could go there. We could go there with Aljo getting
an
Oscar.
That's all right.
But when
I guess it's a double-edged sword.
But when Aljo's knee was clearly on the ground, because granted, Aljamain Sterling was doing that the entire fight, and Jan had just had enough, and he goes, I'm ready to knee this man. In the face, like that, I think warrants a disqualification. I feel like the Aspinall and Gane. I felt like the no contest was a good ruling.
I guess since it's so early in the fight, I agree with
it.
It
was
more.
So early in the
I
fight.
I agree
it
with it more because it was so early in the
it
fight.
It wasn't round. It wasn't like it was round three. Like these guys were going to round three anyway. Let's be real. They weren't. It wasn't round four. It was not. It was very early in the fight, and they were just like, we haven't seen enough of this. We're going to call this a no contest with the winner. We'll do the rematch when Tom Aspinall heals up. But honestly, I'm happy we're now getting the Tom Aspinall-Cyril Gane rematch because we had a heavyweight title eliminator fight at UFC 321 as well. It looks like we had a number one contenders fight between Alexander Volkov and Jalton Almeida. And
this fight was a triumph
that
for all UFC enjoyers.
That was, honestly, can I say something?
Say something.
Go right on.
That was the worst fight I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, Thomas Almeida is a...
Jalton Almeida.
Thomas Almeida
is a bantamweight.
I can't believe I mess up the Almeidas.
That's crazy.
Jalton Almeida is laying on dudes for entire fights.
Jalton Almeida might be the nicest fighter in the world, in my opinion. Because, yeah, you could tell he wants to win the fight. But, man, Jalton Almeida doesn't want to hurt you. Jalton Almeida does not want to hurt you whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean,
could you elaborate further?
I'm looking at total strikes here. And, listen, there were people saying that that Jalton Almeida deserved to win this fight because of control time.
However, neither deserved to win this fight.
He landed 27 total strikes in this fight. 27.
Jalton Almeida 9 for 10 on significant strikes landed in the entire fight.
To Volkov's 123 total strikes landed, 123 to 27. Give me 123 all day.
This was like one of those fights where I just go, what am I watching? Because Jalton Almeida just likes to sit on top of him. He just wants to stay. He just wants to stand there. He's probably the best heavyweight grappler we've ever seen in our lives. 10 minutes and 47 seconds of control time for Jalton Almeida. But Jalton Almeida does not want to posture up. He does not want to move position. He does not want to do damage. He likes to sit on top of a guy for nothing.
And I think it's wonderful that the judge is actually rewarded a performance like, well, not rewarded Volkov. I mean, it's not like he actually triumphed in any way. It's nice that they did not give that sort of, they didn't give it respect to just pure control time without any advancement or damage.
When I was watching that fight and I saw I was just watching that fight and I said, oh my God, I don't want Almeida to win whatsoever. This is not going to be good. Like, please don't. Like I don't want him anywhere near the heavyweight title right now.
Yeah, that'd be so boring.
And
I want to see Volkov back in it, too.
What?
Volkov's back in it, and I want to see him. I mean, obviously, there's this thing where Tom Aspinall already beat him.
And Gon beat him twice.
But it seems like it's kind of, well, Gon is, that's a suspect decision.
Well, the first one, no, but the second one is a suspect decision.
Yeah, I'm talking about the second one, yeah. So I think he deserves to be back in there. Sure.
I think so too, but again, like from what I saw, I'm not excited about Alexander Volkov being back in the title picture. It feels like it's like, oh my God, we still have the same guys from like 2018 still. Like Alexander Volkov has been fighting for a title shot for around 8 years now, and he's been in this like top five. I'm at the point now where we need new, fresh life in the heavyweight division, and we've had Gon fighting for titles for 4 years at this point. Aspinall is finally in the conversation. He was interim champion for 2 years. We have Francis Ngannou probably not coming back. The heavyweight division is probably the worst it's ever been. Almeida is the most boring fighter on planet Earth. But thank God on the prelims, because this would have been a heavyweight disaster card, except for the one, the only, Walter Walker. Walter Walker got his fourth, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but fourth heel hook submission in a row.
That's a weird submission.
Well,
that is, to say how hard that is one of the most rarest submissions you see in the UFC. Because what happens when you have when a fighter goes for a heel hook or like a leg lock is most of the time the fighter postures out of the lock. And they take top mount. So you don't see it attempted very much. You don't see it gone for very much. You see people try and do it, but like most of the time you see it backfires.
Yeah, you see an almost heel hook.
You see an almost
nearly every fight.
Usually you see an almost heel hook, and then the other fighter gets top posture, like top control and top mount, and the fighter regrets going for the heel hook. But Walter Walker, four in a row, I got to give that man credit, because what he does is it's beautiful. He has four first round heel hooks in a row since August, since UFC 305. That is so impressive. And at this point now, the heavyweight division is so untalented. You start to wonder, can he start doing this to ranked people?
It's possible.
We're going to take a look at the heavyweight rankings real quick.
I think he probably could, because so much weird stuff happens in the heavyweight division, because everyone is like, not good at something. Like, it feels like everyone in the heavyweight division is horrible at something.
So, like, so we will. If when I take a look at the heavyweight division, Walter Walker is 14th right now. I could see him doing this to Tai Tuivasa at 12. I could see him doing this to Tai Bora. As much as I hate to say it, I could see him doing it to Derek Lewis. Sergey Spivak is a little bit of a tough one. Honestly, a fun fight I think to make is honestly Jalton Almeida and Walter Walker.
Yeah, at least we get if someone trying to counter the wrestling.
If you're going to pair Jalton Almeida up with anybody, please have it be a very good striker. Or a very good grappler, at least, so we could see Jalton Almeida actually have to work and not lay on top of somebody for 15 minutes or 25 minutes, depending on how long that fight's going to go. Again, my favorite Jalton Almeida moment of all time is UFC 299 prelims. I have a bet on Curtis Blaydes, and my other friend has a bet on Jalton Almeida. And Jalton Almeida takes Curtis Blaydes down 10 times in the first round. 10 wow. takedowns in the first. And Curtis keeps getting, because Curtis Blaydes is a great wrestler too. Curtis Blaydes keeps getting back up. Curtis Blaydes keeps getting back up. Curtis Blaydes keeps getting back up.
I think I watched this fight.
And Jalton.
So do I.
And then I'm like, okay. Jalton definitely has this. Jalton has this in the bag. My friend's making fun of me. He's like, haha, I should have bet the other way. Jalton goes for his next takedown in the start of the second round and gets met with a Curtis Blaydes uppercut.
Yeah, and it's funny because Curtis Blaydes got met with a very similar uppercut by Derek Lewis.
Oh,
which was awesome. That was like one of the greatest things ever.
I still have my reaction to that. I have a live footage reaction of that one. That was February 2021. That was just an all-time great moment for Derek Lewis. It ended up getting him his interim title shot against Cyril Gane, too.
Yeah.
We had Derek Lewis for the interim title in 2021, and then he couldn't do anything against Cyril Gane.
We're getting Derek Lewis for the heavyweight title in 2027 as well.
We're
pushing that narrative.
Honestly, I will push that narrative any day of the week. Well, that was who John Jones said he wanted to fight over Tom Aspinall.
I would agree with that fight. Like, who argues with that fight? Obviously, John Jones is not a serious fighter anymore. Although, he does actually want to fight Alex Pereira, which I actually think is also not a serious fight. I think John Jones would just grab him and
kill
him.
I love Alex Pereira, but that is the easiest fight for John Jones.
John Jones is going to grab him and kill him.
That he can ever do. That is John Jones' easiest fight because he can just take him down.
See, Derek Lewis, on the other hand, you're always going to have that tension because you just know.
You'll have that tension for a little bit, but at some point, mind you, we've had interim title fights, Derek Lewis. We've had heavyweight title fights, Derek Lewis.
Listen, he's hitting a second prime. Trust me on this.
Honestly, we're at the top. We're at like third prime at this point right now. I can't even lie.
Listen, he's racked up two dubs in a row here.
He has racked up two dubs in a row, but
he lost to Almeida. But we all know Almeida sucks, and we are not counting that. We are not counting Almeida losses anymore. He's eliminated from UFC conscious.
He was on a giant losing streak for the longest time. He lost to Tai Tuivasa, who hasn't won a fight yet. He lost to Sergey Pavlovich, and he lost to Sergey Spivak. And we thought, oh, he's definitely, like, he's done. He's going to be done. But, man, Jalton Almeida, geez. And then he lost to Jalton Almeida. But have you ever seen the Marcos Rodrigo de Lima knockout? If you've ever seen the Marco Rodrigo de Lima knockout, he comes in with the Jorge Masvidal flying knee.
Maybe I'll just cut it after.
He comes in with the Jorge Masvidal flying knee. And it was one of the funniest things you've ever seen in your life.
Well, to be honest, I have a question. I meant to ask this when you were bringing it up. Your hypothetical matchup between Victor Walker and
Walter Walker, yep,
and Jalton Almeida. Who do you think would win?
Jalton Almeida, because at that point, because I think Walter Walker is going to play the ground game with him,
mm-hmm.
on like somebody like Volkov that is not, or he's just going to sit there and come back and wait for him to. Wait for the ref to stand them up so he could get stood back up again like the normal strikers do. But what I see with Walter Walker is I see him playing the ground game. But we have a generational heavyweight grappler on our hands with Jalton Almeida.
Yeah.
But at the same time.
He's scared to fight.
I don't know what it is because he would win. He would be so dominant and he would be so good. If he just postures up and throws punches sometimes,
he doesn't want to get hurt. It's like he doesn't know how to fight.
It's all he needs to do. He just needs to posture up and punch. And I feel like he might get caught in a submission if that happens. I want to move on from the heavyweight division right now. And I'm going to talk about a little bit of the stuff that happened on the rest of the card. Quillian Scaliad knocked out Nazrat Haparas.
Nazrat Haparas, I think.
Yes.
And he was supposed to be good.
He's been in the game for a while.
Maybe I'm talking about supposed to, as in like literally like 4 years ago, he was supposed to be good.
But that was the knockout of the year.
I saw a little bit of it, but that knockout was crazy.
That was the knockout of the year. Now we had to discuss that. I don't think anybody's going to take that credit away from Quillian.
I think that's a name, by the way. Think about Quillian. Quillian Salkild.
Alexander Rakic is not back. I think it is officially time to put Alexander Rakic's title contention dreams on the back burner.
Yeah, we're all okay with that.
Same here.
I don't know if I want to say I'm okay with that. He had a really, after his first round knockout loss to Azmat Mirzakhanov,
Yep.
Big. That was a big time loss. He's lost four in a row now. He was doing really well in that Jan Blachowicz fight, and then he tore his ACL in the middle of round three. And as you could tell, the Jiří fight was really close, but Jiří was like, oh my God, Rakic's about to knock out Jiří. And you know what happens when you think Jiří Prochazka's about to get knocked out.
There is no way Jiří Prochazka won that fight like a month ago, whenever that was.
Jiří Prochazka beat Khalil Roundtree, mind
you.
Yeah,
there's no way.
So, when Jiří Prochazka is about to get knocked out, you know that you're just you got to accept that you're about to go to sleep. Lost the decision to Magomed Ankalaev and is now lost to Asmat a year later. It has not been a good couple of years for him. Maybe a Dominic Reyes fight. Maybe we get Alexander Rakic versus Dominic Reyes between your two big prospects of 2019.
Yeah, that's kind of an unk fight.
Absolutely.
Like, but they're not really unks. It's like for like the old
UFC fan classic. I wouldn't say an old UFC fan classic, but you get a fight of, oh, Dominic's 35. Wow.
2019 UFC fans are kind of old UFC fans, because I feel like people started really getting into UFC maybe around, I mean, people like Conor McGregor, but when like Sean O'Malley was like winning his title, like people really started paying attention.
Don't call 2019 old UFC
fans. It's kind of old.
Well, Ryan, in your opinion, what year or age do you have to be in order to be considered unk in UFC?
Oh, like as a fighter?
Yeah.
It depends what your division is.
It really depends on the division.
Higher divisions, like light heavyweight, it might be 40. Once you hit 40, you're unk. Lower divisions, 38.
Okay.
Honestly, it could be even younger, like sometimes 36, you're kind of unk.
So there was until recently, it was fighters over, there was only one fighter with it until there's two people that have broken this curse. It was fighters that are over the age of 35 from around 100, from 170 pounds to 125 were 1 and like 70 something in title fights. And the one win was when 35-year-old Tyron Woodley beat Darren Till.
Wow.
Darren Till's on a little uprise right now in boxing.
I don't know if we need to talk about misfit boxing.
Ignore the Darren Till reference in 2025.
I had to bring up Darren Till. Shout out Darren Till. But Bilal Muhammad was the first one to also break that when he beat Leon Edwards. And now we have a 36-year-old again reigning as your featherweight champion in Alexander Volkanovski.
He's special, though.
He's 37-year-old Alexander.
He's not your average unk.
Alexander Volkanovski should not be the champion right now. And I don't care if he lost to Ilya Topuria. Alexander Volkanovski will go down as the greatest featherweight of all time.
I think there's no doubt about it.
There's
no debate from me.
There can't be a debate when you look at Alexander Volkanovski and his record. Because Ilya moved up way too quickly. And granted, Ilya would have been the
Yeah, he would have been the greatest featherweight of all time if he sat on it a little bit.
If he had sat on it. There are four people consider to be in the featherweight GOAT conversation. Is Conor McGregor, Max Holloway, Jose Aldo, Alexander Volkanovski. And everybody, I think, has their own reasons.
I don't think anyone...
Conor...
It would be extremely difficult for someone to argue that Max Holloway is better than Volkanovski.
Well, okay, so this is what
Unless you're trying to argue about like the first fight or whatever.
This is what I would say a couple years ago. That was the debate. Because you have Aldo, who had the 9-fight title defense streak, he did. And then Conor went on his magical run, didn't lose. He beat Holloway, Poirier, Aldo, all at 145. Just special, special run from him, and won the title, and then moved up. Never got the chance to defend the title. Aldo had his run, which lasted a decade, through the WEC and then the merger with the UFC. And then you had... And then you have Max Holloway, who beat Jose Aldo twice and then went on his little run. But then the thing is, you have to give it to Alexander Volkanovski to be the GOAT. because he's the one to have beaten Holloway three times. He's beaten Aldo. He's beaten Korean Zombie. He's beaten Yair. He's beaten Ortega. He's beaten everybody from his era. Chad Mendes as
Diego
well.
Lopez. He's beaten everyone. He's beaten not everyone. He's beaten someone from the next era.
He has beaten somebody from the next era. And probably the guy from the next era. Because
Diego Lopez is crazy. I can't. But Volkanovski winning that fight just doesn't even feel right. Like, it felt like, okay, this guy's young. He's crazy.
It felt
miracles happen, gang.
It felt right in my eyes.
It was kind of a miracle, but it was also like, wow. Just because he lost to Topuria and Makhachev does not mean he lost anything. Because those two guys are, like, the best fighters of all time.
We could potentially call UFC 314 the card of the year. UFC 320 is up there. UFC 322 will be up there. But that was a special, special card with Paddy Pimblett. As a Michael Chandler hater, I was so happy during that fight. I never thought I'd ever cheer for Paddy Pimblett in my life.
Yeah, me too. Well, I don't hate Michael Chandler. I was rooting for Michael Chandler. I hate Paddy Pimblett. I'll hate on him, whatever. It's because he's British, maybe. I don't know. Maybe it's because of his haircut. Whatever.
I am an S-tier Michael Chandler hater. I cannot take myself to...
What's the lore behind that? Is it because he sat around and waiting for Conor McGregor for 2 years?
Oh, it was way before he sat around and waited for Conor McGregor. It started from the moment he knocked out Benson Henderson in his last Bellator fight.
We're beefing with him since Bellator.
I've been beefing with him since Bellator. Then he moves over to UFC. He knocks out Dan Hooker. They give him an immediate title shot. He's talking about how he could beat Khabib. He was the backup for Khabib and Gaethje. And then he's talking about beating Khabib. And Khabib says it best. He's like, Michael Chandler, easy fight. Easy fight. I no need wrestling for Michael Chandler. And Khabib, there looks like to be a time where Khabib is going to be when Khabib retires. There's 5 minute window where it looks like Michael Chandler is about to be our champion.
Yeah, dude, he was knocking the hell out of Charles Oliveira.
There was a 5 minute window where it looks like Charles Oliveira is going to be our champion of the world.
I don't like that Islam Makhachev is ruining my glorious Charles Oliveira title that he should be holding on to for generations.
Well, you can't blame Islam Makhachev anymore either.
Yeah,
there's one more person you could blame as well.
Now I could blame another person, the inevitable.
You could blame Ilya Topuria for that one too. There's two people you have to blame, but like that's the thing. Charles did hold the title. Mind you, Charles got robbed of the title. UFC, was it UFC 2, no, it was a little bit before that. It was 2.
Which fight are we talking about
here? It was 274.
Which fight here?
So Charles, do you guys know how Charles Oliveira lost the title, right?
How did he?
I would if you told me. I'm just trying to remember. Cause
in the Justin Gaethje fight, he missed weight.
Oh yeah, and then they
there were some apparently it was some faulty scales.
Well, yeah, that was a whole controversy. But come on, bro.
But Charles Oliveira was stripped of the title, and Justin Gaethje was the only one who could win the title. So Charles when Islam beat Charles, granted that's where the whole the champ has a name thing came because we all knew Charles was the champ.
Yeah, that was the whole. Champ.
That technically wasn't a title defense. If we're looking back technically, and I feel like people forget this a lot, Oliveira was technically not champion and did not win a championship going into that fight.
Yeah, he did knock him out, though, and it was awesome.
I mean, he didn't knock him out. He submitted him.
Oh, well, yeah, he knocked him out.
He knocked him down.
He knocked him down in the
Charles tournament. Oliveira got dropped twice and then submitted Justin Gaethje within a round. Yeah. And that was the story of Charles Oliveira's run as the, I would say, the king of violence. When you look back on the three-fight run of Chandler, Dustin and Gaethje, he became the king of violence because Charles Oliveira, when he chokes out Dustin Poirier, everything leading into 20. When you look at 2021 as a retrospect from the UFC, it's the year of Kamaru Usman, but it was supposed to be the year of Dustin Poirier. It was supposed to be. When I always like to look back at the end of the year, and I like to reflect on my fight of the years, my fighter of the years, my stories of the year, disappointments of everything, I get a narrative going into the last card going. This year, I'll get into it this year. I'll actually get into it for a second this year. But when you look back at like the previous year in the UFC, you had that in 2021, Dustin Poirier has his two major fights with Conor McGregor. He cases Conor in Dubai in January in front of nobody.
That's back when I kind of liked McGregor.
And he knocked him out, and everybody was.
And McGregor was on his recovery arc. He was like, I'm a nice person now.
And then he was on his nice person, and then Dustin went on Joe Rogan, and said, "Oh, I don't think Dustin went on Joe Rogan and said, "I do not believe. I don't think Conor sent the money to my charity."
Yeah.
That was what happened, and Conor went on Twitter, and the nice guy Conor was gone. But I think that also UFC 257 and UFC 264. I said 57.
Yeah, no, I was hoping you were gonna eventually say 67, so I pre-fired it.
No, I said so at UFC 264.
Since there's no camera, I did emote the 6-7.
So normally nobody wants to see that fight happen again. Like Dustin just won by second round knockout, but Dustin knew he was gonna get another fat paycheck.
Yeah, it was
Conor wanted the revenge.
And honestly, to be completely honest, that fight would have actually probably been close if Conor didn't snap his leg. I know he got dominated. I think they were gonna go at it.
I don't think it would have been that close. I think if you look at UFC 257, Conor was not training. Conor had so much. What Conor was thinking for that fight is. As you said, when did you start getting into UFC, Ryan?
The first UFC fight, which one did I really watch? I think, okay, wait, this is why I have a soft spot for Volkov. One of the first UFC events I remember watching was him versus...
Lewis?
Yeah, him versus Lewis.
So
it was
UFC 229.
And then I remember seeing Volkov versus Overeem. In 2021.
Yep, and February 2021, and that was Alistair Overeem's last UFC fight too.
Yeah, and that was kind of just I wasn't completely locked in, but I was definitely in there.
Okay, so you're kind of familiar with this time period. You might not be completely locked in, but do you know what Conor was talking about? I think the months before the Poirier fight and going into 2021, what was it supposed to be?
Poirier two.
Going into Poirier two, so before Poirier two. What Conor's goal for 2021 was originally?
No.
Conor was supposed to box Manny Pacquiao.
I remember hearing about that.
That was Conor's big thing by the end of 2020 was that by the end of 2021 he was going to box Manny Pacquiao. So
he's just trying to make money.
Well, right. What happened was he took the Dustin Poirier fight. That's why Dustin Poirier 2. Sorry, it's Dustin. That is Dustin Poirier. There's two in 2020. In 2021, but there's one in 2014. So then going into Dustin Poirier 2, Conor McGregor is taking that fight to be solely focused on Manny Pacquiao. So when you see it, he's not in his karate stance that he's normally. He's not in that kickboxing stance. He's in a pressure boxing stance because he's training for a fight against Manny Pacquiao.
He looked nasty in that boxing stance before he was getting chopped down.
Why he got chopped by the leg kicks.
Yeah.
He kept getting chopped by the leg kicks because he wasn't focusing on it. He was focusing on trying to fight Manny Pacquiao, and he looked past Dustin Poirier, and that's what got him knocked out by Dustin Poirier. And so what happened is he needed the rematch. And normally, you don't redo this fight, by the way. You normally don't go back and redo a fight like that.
It's Conor McGregor.
But this is what I'm going to say about Conor McGregor, where he is honestly, he's the greatest draw in the history of our sport.
Yeah, it's not even an argument.
Nobody does million-dollar buys anymore. Nobody does million-dollar buy rates anymore.
I think now you need two fighters. See, that's the difference. No, people like to hype up Pereira, Adesanya, but these people get big fights, but they need another person.
Adesanya and Pereira needed each other. But here's what I'm going to say.
Conor McGregor fights Eddie Alvarez or something, and it's a huge
UFC
deal.
UFC 257 had $1.6 million pay-per-view buys.
Wow,
57 is three.
That was two. That was two.
Yeah, I was.
That was in
it.
January. Dustin won decisively. UFC 264 had 1.8. So they did the same fight 6 months later, less stacked card. Because that 257, when you look back, that card was stat. Armin Sarukian and Matt Frivola prelims. Michael Chandler, Dan Hooker. Marina Rodriguez, Amanda Ribas. Oh, so Khalil Roundtree was also on the prelims. And Mosar and Amir Albazi, too. Wow. Oh, Khalil Roundtree lost on the prelims. Juliana Pena in her last fight before she would go on to beat Nunes. And UFC 264's card was also not the main co-main event. Was Gilbert Burns, Wonderboy, Tai Tuivasa, Greg Hardy, Irene Aldana, Yana Santos. And Chris Moitano stepped in on short notice to face Sean O'Malley in a fight that was... Man, you just saw somebody get beat up that fight.
Yeah,
that was,
you saw Sean like break his hands.
And then one of the funny... Carlos Condit had one of his last fights against Max Griffin. Nico Price fought Michelle Pereira. And does anybody remember who Ryan Hall is?
Yeah, he used to roll around. He rolled around.
Ryan Hall rolled around, and he was very funny. Ryan Hall has not had a fight. I feel bad because Ryan Hall would just take years off.
He'd come back and roll around.
So Ryan Hall, he fought Derek Minner after this at UFC 269, so he had one more fight. But Ryan Hall would roll around, and he was like this. He was a prospect still, even though he hadn't fought in almost 2 years. He had taken some time off. He fought... You know who he fought at UFC 264? On the prelims.
Did he fight Ilya Topuria?
He fought Ilya Topuria.
Yeah, I watched that. I remember that.
That was one of the funniest things I think I've ever seen in my life. Because he's going for heel hooks.
He got absolutely clobbered.
That is the great example from what I was talking about earlier with Walter Walker. Where people, like, when I said that people, when people, like, get the bottom, like, a heel hook, they stand up and they go into top mount. Ryan Hall was going for heel hooks, and he just goes boom, 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 boom from the top and knocks him out.
To finish out UFC 321, since we went on a generational tangent, which was pretty awesome, Mackenzie Dern beat Verna Jandaroba. And I thought that was pretty fun because she's ready to like kind of launch it to stardom.
Mackenzie Dern has been into stardom for years. I'm very happy Mackenzie Dern can now finally call herself a champion. I'm gonna be honest. I think Tatiana Suarez is waiting on the other side, waiting to just take that gold from her right away. I don't know if or Lemos. I don't know Orion. I feel like Mackenzie Dern is gonna be a one and done.
Yeah, she. I can agree.
I can't.
They kind of. This is like a perfect situation to make her the championship.
It was the perfect situation to make her a champion, and we could finally say that Mackenzie Dern is.
And
a
we
champion.
Took it.
Mackenzie Dern is a little industry planted.
She is kind of an industry plant.
But I don't mean it in a bad way. Like
She's a
jiu-jitsu star that was very famous before she got into the UFC. So the UFC was going to do everything in their power to make her a star for them as well. And good on them that it happened. Again, she got a title fight over somebody she'd beaten 5 years earlier. Or she got a title shot against somebody she had beaten 5 years earlier. Maybe not the fight in the Mixed Division when she was ranked number 7th. At the time, and now she's the champion. It's not a Sean Strickland situation. It was we didn't actually have a champion at that point. Now that Whaley had to vacate, and Whaley and Shevchenko is going to be so much fun.
Should we get into the gambling?
One more thing before we get into the gambling. One more thing about the main card about UFC 321. Wow, I almost went back 100 cards ago. I'm an UNC MMA fan, guys. It's still surreal that we're in the 300s at this point. Umar Nurmagomedov and Mario Bautista. What a fight that was between two great grapplers.
I love this. I thought this card was. Actually, I did not think this card was good. I don't know.
That fight
was a good one.
That was a great fight. Better than it had any right to be. Better than expected. Mario had his moments, but Umar is still the man. And then I loved what Umar said after.
What did he say?
Umar does not want to fight for the title right away. Even he probably should. He is the number one contender. He probably should. He said he does not want to fight for the title after, because he wants to. Really, because he's fought Merab this year already, and he said he wants to get one or two more wins under his belt before he takes on Merab in a rematch. And you don't normally see that happen, but for somebody to be that confident and to know, be like, hey, before I fight this guy, I want to go through the rest. I want to go through more of the division as well.
I think he wants to establish his. I think he wants to establish himself as a great of the division before he loses. I feel like that.
I feel like when that happens, you also have somebody that's going to be able to. I think he knows that he might need a little more experience before fighting Merab again, and he's just gonna build that resume back up, because Merab's win streak right now. Merab is at a 14 fight win streak. He is close to the record. Anderson Silva is 16, most wins straight in the UFC, 16.
I think he's going to get it too.
Well, Islam could get it. Islam could tie it first as Islam fights next week or a week and a half. Usman had 15 as well. And before I mention that win streak too, I'm sorry for going on a tangent before we bring up gambling again.
No, you're good.
I remember watching Leon Edwards, Kamaru Usman, and that was when Usman lost. Because that the entire week everybody was talking about the entire storyline narrative leading up to that Leon Edwards, Kamaru Usman fight was Usman tying Anderson Silva's record for most wins in a row.
I said fluke too.
Well, he lost the rematch too.
Yeah, but that was like he would never have lost that rematch.
But I said
it's the first one.
I said, oh, it's okay. Don't worry. He needs one more, and that's when it hit me. I said, no, Usman is not going to get that record anymore. We just saw his like Usman losing by knockout means he's not going to tie Anderson Silva at his age because now he's still even older. He was old back then.
How old is Usman now? Like almost 40.
He might be 40.
Someone look that up.
I got it. He is 38 years old.
Gotcha.
Because let's be real, he doesn't have 16 more fights left in him. You can't get that. You can't get that win streak back when you don't even have that many fights left. So that was like, when you think of somebody, the impact of somebody losing, is that deep to where they're not going to be able to tie that Anderson Silva record. That's when you know you've witnessed something special. If JDM's hoping to be the one to put a stop to keep Anderson's record intact for Makhachev, or to beat Makhachev, he wants to keep Anderson Silva's record alive because he wants to retain his title. Let's get into gambling though, Ryan.
Let's start gambling.
This is this is probably where I'm gonna have a lot to say, although I've been very quiet.
You get into the gambling since we know Ethan's a gambling expert.
I am not a gambling expert.
He's
I just know that sometimes with you know, gambling around, not just UFC, but around a whole bunch of other sports leagues, this can, like, honestly wreck players and wreck athletes who participate in it. And in my opinion, it's not only unfair to the athletes, but it also paints a bad image on the entire league as a whole, because if they're able to pull one and then they pull another and pull another, it's honestly going to literally make it look like the entire league is kind of like a sham and that players do this all the time. I'll give you an example of that. I'll use MLB, for example, with the whole Pete Rose thing, although that was more so like betting on games. That kind of wrecked Pete Rose's entire career, and it also got him banned from the MLB Hall of Fame. Now, listen.
Add him to the Hall of Fame.
What was that? I'm sorry.
He should be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Pete Rose should be in the Hall of
Fame. But in terms of like... in terms of gambling and that wrecking players' careers, I don't think that should literally like ruin someone for the rest of their lives. You can have an asterisk next to it, but if you're just going to take one incident and have that erase their entire career and entire accomplishments and everything they did in the ring or on the field or on the ice, however you want to put it, then frankly, I think that there's a problem with you, because I don't believe one incident should be the end of someone's life or their career. What do y'all think?
I don't think so either, but obviously there's been a whole gambling thing recently with like Chauncey Billups and Terry Rozier.
Yes.
And now we're going after the UFC. And it looks as though the UFC has maybe the most damning widespread allegations of all of the leagues.
I would say in the UFC, like for Pete Rose's case, maybe not, and everything. In this case, it should ruin your career.
No, yeah, I think as a UFC fighter, it should totally ruin your career. And if you want to get to the reason why this is totally like...
Talk to me.
...widespread in the UFC, Ethan said talk to me, because he knows exactly why. They don't pay these fighters enough. You get paid $12,000 for a fight. You can make $60,000 on a bet.
The first ever UFC big gambling incident happened on November 5th, 2022, during the Marina Rodriguez Amanda Lemos Apex card. It was Sherilyn Nudurin Baki versus Derek Minor. And what happened was in Derek Minor's case, Derek Minor's coach was James Krause. James Krause was he was an up and coming coach at the time. He was a former UFC fighter. He was very big, but he was also a very big gambler, and he was a very big. He had his own gambling newsletter to bet on the sport of MMA, where he would pay and he would give his picks and everything. But he was also one of the top tier coaches in MMA.
Yes,
Derek Minor appeared to have gotten an injury in training camp that they didn't report. And that week, there was a giant bet taken out on against Derek Minor, like a insane level bet for the type of fight it was.
Yeah.
And Derek Minor looks visibly hurt from the moment he gets in the cage, and he gets submitted really quickly. He's not doing much, and it was just like the odds shifted almost immediately, and everybody was like, wait a minute, what's going on here? And then it was revealed that James Krause's coach was the one that took out the bet. And because he was injured, they knew. And pretty much James Krause has been suspended from going back in the UFC. Derek Minor has not had a fight in the UFC. He was cut from the UFC. He's had one fight this year since that fight in 2022, where he lost a split decision to Brock Hammer at Dynasty Combat Sports.
Yeah.
But it was one of those situations where it was like, oh, we cannot have this happening. Like,
okay,
at
fair
all.
Enough.
Because these guys are betting against themselves, and they're throwing the fights. And now we had the same thing just happen over the weekend at the Steve Garcia-David Onama fight card between Isaac Dullerin and Yadier Dovale. As Dana White said, Dana White came out and said this recently over the weekend, that this is an Apex Fight Night card, ladies and gentlemen. This is the third fight on there. There was between a 7-2 and a 7-2 and a 10-0 fighter. There was a $16 million bet placed on Yadier Dovale versus Isaac Dullerin.
You got to try and be a little more discreet than that.
Yeah,
here.
That's like way
there
too
obvious.
There
was a $16 million bet. And then it was the odds. I think Isaac was the favorite at one point, and then the odds just shifted. So the UFC was contacted they called Isaac to ask if anybody had asked, like, you know what I mean? They said all the things. He said, no, I'm all good. Like, it's okay. You know what I mean? Isaac goes into this, he doesn't throw a single punch. Like, he's not throwing anything. He went 0 for 1 on significant strikes, 0 for 1 on takedowns, 3 for 6 on total strikes.
Wow.
He's not throwing anything whatsoever. Like, he's not doing anything. Like, he's not throwing a punch. He's just, like,
moving around.
There were 3 submission attempts, and then when you could see it, usually when you get into a rear naked choke, you got a hand fight, you got to watch the choke, yada, yada, yada. And he just kind of lets the choke just happen. And everybody on the internet immediately said, investigate this fight right now because of what's happening.
I think something that Dana said after that stood out to me, though, which is why I was putting on them fight that they don't pay these fighters enough, is that he said that multiple UFC fighters after texted him was like, yo, I've been offered to throw fights many times. He said that multiple different fighters said that
they all came out on Twitter recently and started saying it.
You know how many people probably actually did? It's definitely happened, and we don't know about it.
So
if you get paid $12,000 in a fight and you can make more, you can make potentially more money off of throwing a fight than you can in your entire year's UFC salary. That's like an automatic, like, yeah, I'm taking it for sure.
But as we know, that isn't good for the sport. So there's an investigation open on 100 different fights in 2025. And another person that's being looked into is Jason Herzog, the referee.
Really?
One of the referees, Jason Herzog. And there was one, actually, there was one instance that I found it very interesting where there was a fight. I saw it on an Instagram post, like, right before we got in here.
Yeah.
Where it looked like the fight should have been stopped. like it was like the second round. It was like at like two. It was like a 240 something.
Uh-huh.
And he lets the fight keep going and going and going, at right until a little bit past 2 minutes and 30 seconds, and then he stops the fight after he finally stops the fight. But then you're starting to wonder, did he have the over on 1.5 rounds? Like, it looks like, oh, wait a minute, that's 1.5 rounds right there. Wait a minute, that's usually the betting line for over under.
Yeah.
Did he extend the fight, let the fighter take more damage, so the over on rounds would hit?
Wow.
And now it's something we really need to question in our sport is, the UFC doesn't work with the athletic commissions. The athletic commissions
works with the UFC, or
no? The UFC regulates the athletic commission. The UFC, okay. So the UFC doesn't have a say on referees, on judges, on all this type of stuff. UFC has a say on their fighters, and that's about it. Like the promotion. Like it's like, okay, you're gonna fight you, the state we're in, or state, country, wherever, is going to officiate. The UFC does not have their own officials. It is the athletic commission officials. But the thing with the athletic commission is they don't hold the referees or judges responsible for screwing up.
Let me say this. I've plugged this book before, but I'm going to plug it again to anyone who's listening. Go buy Tim Donaghy's book, Personal Foul. You will personally understand how much referees across any sport can bet on games.
So, for example, with the NBA, you know how there are NBA refs?
Yes.
There's an NBA refs union, and the NFL, there's an NFL ref union. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. Uh-huh.
Because if these guys make terrible mistakes, no way.
Yeah.
But
off with your head, yeah.
Because it's the UFC will criticize the reffing all they want, because it's given by the athletic commissions.
Yes.
There is no, and all the commissions use the same refs. There is no reprimanding. There's no, like, Dan Mergliotta just reffed again the next week like nothing had happened after he had probably the worst performance of a referee on three different fights on a fight card I've ever seen in my life.
Jeez.
Yeah, the UFC really has no say over these refs, and it's kind of weird, but I feel like in terms of the gambling thing, I feel like there's probably a lot more to come out, especially in these low prelim fighters. I mean, what's stopping you from maybe a $5,000 bet?
Well, I'm wondering now, what are we, like, if it's also happening on the lower level, it could also be happening on the higher level too.
You'd hate to see it. I mean, one fight that I always theorized was fixed was Derek Lewis's loss to Tai Tuivasa when he caught an elbow to his right against the cage, and I was like, I don't know. He fell down. He looked like he was kind of holding himself up before he fell.
Like that was more or less fixed, and Derek Lewis is just like, I don't want to actually get knocked out.
Yeah,
I'm losing this fight. I feel like Derek Lewis taking a dive like that is like Derek Lewis just not wanting to do it anymore and being like, I'm done.
Yeah, he's like,
I'm like three good shots away from getting knocked out. Yeah. Let me like pretend I'm knocked out so I don't actually get knocked out. That's what I feel like that. That's what I feel like that was. I don't feel like Derek Lewis, because, again, if it was like rigged for, mind you, Tai Tuivasa was ranked number 3rd at heavyweight after that. He fought Cyril Gane in France, and he took Cyril Gane to his limit, and he ended up losing that. But Tai Tuivasa, you know, has not won a fight since that Derek Lewis fight.
Yeah, I do know that. I don't know why. It makes no – well, he put on some – he's really fat in the offseason.
It was February – that was February 12th. 2022, and he has fought. He lost to Khan, he lost to Pavlovich, he lost to Volkov, he lost to Tybora, and he lost to Rozenstruik. And still, he is somehow ranked the number 12th heavyweight in the heavyweight division, ladies and gentlemen. Rozenstruik has been cut from the UFC, while Tai Tuivasa
is just like the shoey.
Tai Tuivasa is still here, not having fought in a year, and hasn't won a fight in almost 4 years.
Whew.
I just thought that was a very interesting thing that everybody should know. But we're having a gambling issue. More is going to come out about this. I can't wait to see like who they catch. Like,
I hope there's a big one. I hope not, but I kind of hope they do because it's kind of fun.
To be honest, this gambling scandal it might have mixed implications. Let me explain what I mean. This is obviously bad for the UFC because it puts a giant taint on the company and the people that work for it that basically just allow this thing to go by.
I wouldn't say it taints the company itself, because the company, it's like the what's it called? The fighters and the... It taints the company because, like, yeah, maybe they're underpaying the fighters.
Yeah.
But it doesn't... What I'm trying to say is I don't think it taints, like, the employees of the company, because it's the fighters that are choosing to...
Fair enough.
And it's usually individual teams and coaches. Like, in James Krause's, for example, James Krause, that was, like, his team. And now his team was, like, banned. You can't have James Krause in your corner anymore for UFC fights.
Fair enough. But then also, I think it might also maybe, like, be a good thing in an essence that it maybe gets UFC more popularity. I mean, the UFC has, like, been a popular league for a little bit, but maybe this might expand its, like, overall knowledge to other people who may not be familiar with it. I mean, another example I could give of a scandal where that did was the 2017 Houston Astros cheaters and their whole sign stealing scandal.
From Houston? You shouldn't be saying this.
I'm not from Houston. I live in Dallas currently, but I come here for school. But no, I am not an Astros fan by any means.
Who are you a fan of? The Rangers?
No, I'm a Mets fan.
What?
Yes.
Did you become a baseball fan when you like came up here?
Sort of, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but yeah, if we're being honest, like, that was a scandal that kind of pushed MLB maybe to, like, new popularity. This UFC betting scandal might do the same. You don't have to agree with that, but that's just my take.
Yeah, no, so it's a dirty situation. Like, we've been able to, James Krause was the door that opened it. And it looked like there was a vortex, and they're still under investigation. Dana White said he was on the phone with Cash Patel all day.
Oh, God.
I'd love to hear that conversation.
He had FBI agents in his office right before he did an interview with TMZ. So this is a big deal, and we have to wait and see the fallout of it. Luckily, we're going to have this pod for a while going, so we'll be able to keep track of the updates. I think that's it for today. Except we're just going to talk about this real quickly.
The fight night?
Yeah. I mean, we had the Garcia and Onuma fight night, but we also had, like, mind you, the funniest part that happened last week at that fight night was the Waldo Costas Cortez Acosta fight and Tez Delgia. Did you guys hear about this?
I did not hear about it.
So Delgia is so these are two ranked heavyweights, by the way. Ante Delgija is a training partner of Tom Aspinall.
Oh, wow.
And he goes, I haven't poked anybody in the eye ever in my UFC career. And he proceeds to eye poke Waldo Cortez Acosta. And Waldo's like hurt, and then he comes back out to fight, actually, and he ends up knocking out Ante. So just a bad week all around for Tom Aspinall.
Ouch.
We have a welterweight main event this weekend between Gabriel Bonfim and Randy Brown. We have Matt Schnell and Joseph Morales. Matt Schnell is one of my favorite flyweight fighters. Every time he fights is a great card. We got Ricky Simone on the prelims. He was supposed to be a dog. He's beaten Murad before. We'll discuss that a little next week. It's not the biggest topic in the world. We had some other topics we had to cover.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So this has been Pound for Pound with
Ethan Bess,
Ryan Deptula,
and Travis Hayden. Next week, we're coming back. We have UFC 322 to preview, guys. Let's go.
Let's do it.